Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Half of all the plastic we use is tossed after one use. Straws, plates, food containers, grocery bags, they all make up the category known as single-use plastics. Coming up later, we're going to hear about the impact of those plastics on the environment. Right now, we're talking about how local communities across the country have responded to the environmental threat of single-use plastics with a variety of bans, fees, and other regulations. More than 120 jurisdictions in 22 states across the country have implemented some form of control over the distribution of single-use plastics. That includes the city of Lakewood in Ohio, which recently approved a resolution that supports a proposed 10-cent fee for disposable plastic bags in Cuyahoga County. A bill is under consideration in the Ohio Senate, though, that would ban cities from enacting their own laws on the issue, or cities or, political subdivisions of any type. Joining us is conservation manager for the Ohio chapter of the Sierra Club, Elissa Yoder-Mann. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Joining us now by phone is Lakewood City Councilman Tristan Rader. Welcome to the show.
Thanks.
Tell us about what you did in Lakewood. There's a proposal for a larger ban, a countywide ban, and you were just supporting that, or what?
Exactly. We had a resolution that I brought forward, and we decided to support what the county council is currently considering, and that is a 10-cent bag fee. For the whole county. We believe that it makes sense on a countywide level. I just want to make sure we clarify that we did not suggest that this is going to be something just for Lakewood,
right,
or just for one small municipality. This is something that on a countywide level makes a heck of a lot of sense.
So it's the county commissioners that are considering this?
Yeah. In Cuyahoga County, like Summit County, we actually have a council made up of a lot of members, and they're currently, it's in committee. I talked to Dale Miller this morning. He's one of the council members who brought this forward, and he says it's alive and well. It's in committee, and they're still working out the details, and looking forward to seeing what comes out of that process.
So there's 3.5 miles of Lake Erie shoreline in your city alone, right? This sits
Correct.
Close to home. Tell us about the impact of plastic pollution on Lake Erie.
Sure. Yeah. Not only that, but we have a river. So
yeah, that's right.
We actually have two entire borders of our city are waterways, and we definitely want to make sure that we are doing our part as good stewards of the environment. We know that, and I know you'll get into it later in your show, but 5.5 million pounds of plastic go into Lake Erie every single year, and we know that we should do our part to try to mitigate that if we can, and nudge consumers in a direction that makes a lot of sense, and that's to limit the number of plastic bags. We know that this is successful, and 120, as some of the other research suggests, that there's more than 200 municipalities now that have implemented these fees or taxes, depending on where you're at. And we know that it's successful. We know that it would be successful in Cuyahoga County, and it's just a matter of, doing it.
Elissa, we talked about, we have mentioned the 200-plus municipalities across the country. Now we're talking about Cuyahoga County's plan to do this and Lakewood's vote of support for that. How many counties in Ohio, how many political subdivisions in Ohio are interested in these kinds of bans or regulations or fees to curb the use of these one-use plastics?
Right. Unfortunately, there's not that many communities here in Ohio that are getting even close to having some kind of control over plastic bags, and that's why we didn't really understand why the need for SB 210, just because there's nothing that currently exists in the state of Ohio.
Mm-hmm. And the Republican Senator William Coley of Butler County in southeast Ohio, he's introduced Senate Bill 210, which would ban local municipalities or political subdivisions of any type from enacting their own restrictions or fees or whatnot on these. Have you talked to them about this?
So we have met with many senators who sit in the committee. I really think that, there's a bigger situation going on. We have ALEC and the plastic industry.
American Legislative Exchange Council.
Right. So they're really pushing this. There's nine states that have signed on to similar language as SB 210. And so they're really taking this, uniform statewide language they're trying to move it across the country.
Mm-hmm. Have they been successful anywhere?
Yes. So we have 9 states that have signed on.
Oh, they have enacted it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Ohio is just considering it at this point.
Right. So this is all the same language in these 9 states.
Tristan Rader, there's a lot of issues. Well, another big issue involved here is local control. Tell us what you think about Senate Bill 210 and how are you responding to it?
Sure. I mean, I'll tell you what the I'll do you one better. I'll tell you what the Legislative Service Commission has issued sort of a warning, and it's rare that they do this, that this may be unconstitutional. And it points out that Article 18, Section 3 of the Ohio Constitution says that, you know, local municipalities have the right to govern themselves. And this law may be in conflict with that, and it may be invalid, in fact, if it were passed, according to some court cases. So they've highlighted that, and they're a nonpartisan, totally unbiased organization that mm-hmm. is trying to, you know, put a little bit of meaning here and trying to shade it in a little bit. And they're saying, hey, hold up, wait up, there might be some real constitutional issues, and that's alarming to me.
Well, yeah, but the Ohio General Assembly has limited local control over other things.
Absolutely.
Gun ordinances, that kind of a thing.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, I personally feel like that's egregious. And there's been many of nonpartisan bias organizations who stood up and tried to stop this sort of, you know, real bulldozing of home rule. And it's... You know, it's scary because you're taking away our ability to really ensure that the values of our communities and that the rules and law within our own society are being upheld by, you know, sister somebody in Butler County that's trying to impose on us in Cuyahoga County what we can or can't do with a marginal fee on plastic bags that could have a huge impact, a positive impact on our environment. I just think it's completely backwards. It's completely wrong.
Ohio is a Great Lakes state. Is there any pact between the Great Lakes states on this issue? Do you know, Elissa Mann?
There is not. So the city of Chicago does have a fee on their bags. Mm-hmm. And we do know through research that there are gyres that are collecting, you know, waste that are growing in our Great Lakes.
There are what?
Just like the ocean gyres that collect plastic.
Oh, okay.
They are finding similar gyres in the Great Lakes. With these microplastics in them. So,
okay.
You know, the Weather Channel, they put out a recent video where any of the beer that is made with water from the Great Lakes has a large amount of microfibers and plastics in it. So you're ordering your beer with a side of plastic.
Okay. So that's one of the effects of the plastic. 5.5 million pounds a year of this goes into Lake Erie alone.
So I think the statistic that I have heard also is that 85% of all of our litter on the Lake Erie shoreline is plastic.
Iris in North Linden, you're on the air. Hi, Iris.
Hi. I shop at Kroger's and I take their plastic bags with me when I take my dogs for a walk.
Mm-hmm.
If I take my dogs for a walk without a plastic bag, my neighbors are quite justifiably going to be angry at me. Buying biohazard bags and biodisposable bags is not always possible or accessible. If I have to pay 10 cents for every plastic bag that goes with me out of Kroger's, I need a better suggestion on how to clean this up. I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you.
I use biodegradable bags for my dog. I've never had a problem. I get them at Kroger, but... Elissa Mann, that's what a lot of people do use Kroger bags for.
That is the number one question that people ask is, what am I going to do with my dog poop? And my response is, like, life did exist before plastic bags did, and people got along fine. Like, I also have a dog, and I buy the biodegradable. You can get a huge thing off of Amazon for, like, $25, you know, and it's lasts me over a year. I simply can't, you know, reuse those plastic. I can't consume plastic bags. We would really like to see people refuse plastic bags and find more sustainable alternatives.
Tristan Rader, what are people in Lakewood saying to you about this? Is this a topic of conversation?
Sure, absolutely. I think dog poop's high on the list. But also, as has been pointed out, it can be considered sometimes, if not done appropriately, a regressive tax, because, you know, the less income you have, the harder it's going to be to afford plastic bags or things like that. And mm-hmm. we do see a lot of plastic bag use in our transient population and things of that nature. And however, when you do legislation thoughtfully, which I think that the county council did do here very well, in exempting a lot of the low-income people by anybody using SNAP, which is a mm-hmm. supplementary nutrition assistance or food stamps, will be able to get those bags for free. And then all small grocers, like the corner store grocers, would not be subject to this law. Any store actually with less than 7,000 square feet would not be subject to this fee. So by carving out those more sensitive areas, you can really create some thoughtful legislation. And I think by explaining that to people, they start to get it, because, you know, once they understand the law and how this can be implemented in a way that doesn't harm people, and it really is an environmentally friendly solution. And it's also friendly to the pocketbook. You know, it's not something that my wife and I, like yourself, we try not to take plastic bags when we can. I keep a couple of non-disposable bags in the car, and mm-hmm. we have to buy a box of bags occasionally to clean up the dog poop. Mm-hmm. And that's something that you adapt to very quickly, very easily, if you choose not to take plastic bags. And I don't think it's a huge issue for a lot of people down the road.
Why can't plastic bags in general be made from the same things that the biodegradable plastic bags are for picking up dog poop?
Yeah.
Elissa, I mean,
they could if, the grocers pushed for it, or if the market or consumers pushed for it. And so this is the beginning of that. We've seen, cities over time that have introduced a fee for the people who choose to use a plastic bag or paper bag. And eventually they can, level up and go to biodegradable bags, and the fee is going to be a little bit more for that. But it is a little bit more expensive.
Listeners, we're going to ask you, should local communities get to decide on issues like conservation fees for plastics? Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Tristan Rader, Lakewood City Councilman, going forward, what are you going to do about this?
Sure, we're going to continue to remain vocal and supportive of what the county council is doing. So whenever whenever I get a call from Councilman Miller or whoever, whenever I see on their docket, there's going to be a meeting. I'll certainly attend, and I plan to present the resolution we passed at the next committee hearing. And I'm just waiting for that to kind of come together. Government doesn't move at the speed of light, especially not in Cuyahoga County. So we're just sort of waiting to see what the next move is, and we'll certainly be organizing people to move on this.
Tristan Rader, thanks for joining us today. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Tristan Rader is Lakewood City Councilman. They voted to endorse a county council plan to impose a 10-cent fee on when you get those grocery bags in the grocery store. For every one, you pay 10 cents to lessen the amount of waste going into Lake Erie and other waterways, Cuyahoga River, namely. Coming up, we're going to talk more at a more deeper level about what the issue is with plastic in our waterways and how much of a problem it is. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Dan Fisher. A pilot whale washed up on the shores of Thailand last week, Rescuers tried to save the creature, but it died 5 days later with 17 pounds of plastic bags in its stomach. That episode is not the first and likely won't be the last of the examples of the dangers of plastic pollution in our waterways. More than 8 million tons of plastic enters the just the oceans each year. We're talking about how to manage plastic use. The European Union is considering a ban on single-use plastics such as straws and grocery bags. Many communities across the U.S. have enacted their own regulations. Ohio lawmakers, meanwhile, are considering a proposal to restrain cities from pursuing their own rules. Still with us is conservation manager for the Ohio chapter of the Sierra Club, Elisa Yoder Mann. Joining us by phone is the chief scientist of Ocean Conservancy. That's a nonprofit nonprofit environmental advocacy group based in Washington, D.C. George Leonard, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Anne. It's a pleasure to be here this morning.
A whale washes up with 17 pounds of plastic inside its stomach. Is it even surprising at this point? It seems like a common occurrence nowadays.
Well, it is, and it's certainly a tragedy, but I think we're seeing more and more of this. Obviously, whales are charismatic, and this particular story is really heartbreaking, but it's important to recognize that, plastic is really everywhere in our ocean now. It's in pretty much all the creatures, from the smallest little animals called zooplankton to the fish that we're consuming, up to the kinds of whales like you're just reported on.
So that's what Elisa Mann was talking about earlier at the micro level. It's everywhere.
Yeah, it is. I mean, plastics comes from a couple of different major vectors, including the consumer plastics that you're debating here in Ohio and lots of places around the world are as well. It also comes from microplastics from things like facial scrubs and other strange places that plastic is that most people wouldn't expect it to be. And then the third big source is fishing gear and fishing nets, which get lost in the sea and break up into these little particles as well.
What do we know about how much of this garbage comes from the U.S.?
Well, so Ocean Conservancy facilitated a scientific working group a number of years ago that came out with the study that you, I think, just referenced, which is about 8 million metric tons of plastic is coming into the ocean every year from about 185 coastal countries, with countries with coastal access. Most of that is coming from Southeast Asia. About half is coming from half a dozen rapidly developing countries in that part of the world. But the United States is on that list. It's not on the top 10, but it is on the top 20 out of 180 or so. So the U.S. is definitely part of this problem as well.
Hmm. What kind of effect has the plastic waste had on our oceans? Give us more examples. I mean, we hear about the whales ingesting it, but you're saying it's in everything. It's not, doesn't feel like it's killing us. What do you say to people who want to understand more what the impact is?
So I think in terms of impacts, it's quite clear that plastic is having a big impact on marine animals kind of at the individual level, right? So this example with the whale is a good one. The whale mm-hmm. clearly died of plastic ingestion. And ingestion of large plastic is a big problem, particularly for large animals like whales and sea turtles and some large fish. Ingestion of the, on the other hand, entanglement of things like derelict fishing gear and other big types of material that animals get kind of wrapped up in, particularly whales is a good example of this, that can really impact individuals as well. And then the small stuff is what's getting in to the base of the food web. We don't really know. That's kind of the edge of the scientific understanding. So for the microplastics, we do know mechanistically that they are transferring toxins and chemicals into the animals that are ingesting them. It's still not clear how big an impact that has on individuals, and in particular for humans that are consuming fish that have themselves consumed plastic. There is not yet a smoking gun that this is a huge health risk, although it certainly can't be good for us. But that's sort of the cutting edge of science right now, is trying to understand what the risk is to humans, because, of course, we're sort of at the top of that food web.
We're talking about the impact of plastics in our oceans and waterways. My guest, George Leonard, is chief scientist of Ocean Conservancy. Also with us, Elissa Yoder-Mann. She's conservation manager for the Sierra Club in Ohio. If you have a question or comment, we'd like to hear from you. And we'd like to hear from people about what they think about efforts to conserve plastic by with fees on plastic bags at the grocery store or with banning plastics such as forks and knives, you know, cutlery that way, and all other kinds of plastic that is part of the problem of this dumpage in Lake Erie alone, 5.5 million pounds a year. And we just heard about what's being dumped into the oceans. Billions. 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Tom in Clintonville, you're on the air. Hi, Tom.
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
Great. So I have a comment about this, okay? Mm-hmm. This is getting ridiculous. Mm. I didn't recycle until the city of Columbus gave me a nice big blue bin, made it easy for me. I remodeled my kitchen. Now we have trash on one side, recycling on the other. Mm-hmm. No problem. I don't have an issue with that. I'm kind of a moderate when it comes to the environment. When you get shamed for asking for a daggone straw, give me a break. Like, this is, it's going to, you're going to turn off people like me and just in spite order three straws because it's just, it's crazy. Now, if you want to talk about the environment, okay, I actually, I own my own business and happen to travel to China multiple times a year for business. Mm-hmm. You can see bad things on the environment. Go back to, I read a book about the history of White Castle. And a lot of people don't know that they're not from here. They're from Kansas City. They moved here in the 30s. And some of the executives would not move to Columbus, Ohio, because after a week, their white suits were cream because of all the soot. The environment is not in bad shape. Could it be better? Yeah, but at some point, enough is enough. Mm-hmm. I mean, I want to kind of hear your feedback on that. I mean,
well, Elissa Yoder-Mann, you know, from where you sit at Sierra Club of Ohio, what's your feedback?
So I think that there are a lot of people who feel that straws are a huge waste. So we have seen places like The Crest Gastropub here in Clintonville, Brothers Drake, that have do not serve plastic straws at all. They are working towards zero waste. And so we have all seen the video, or most of us have, of that poor turtle where they're pulling the straw out of this turtle's nose. You can mm-hmm. easily find it on YouTube. And it's heartbreaking. And before plastic straws, we had paper straws. Mm-hmm. The bottle shop in my neighborhood, they also use metal straws. So there are a lot of sustainable alternatives that really don't make your life any more challenging. You know, there are alternatives to still have conveniences in your life.
Tom in Clintonville, thanks for your call. I appreciate it. Don in Lexington, let's see. Oops. Don in Lexington, you have a different point of view. Hi, Don.
Hi. Hey. The fellow that was speaking about give me a break about the straws, he's totally wrong. But it gets to a point that the oceans is full of nothing but straws. Well, what's he going to say then? I mean, I understand where he's coming from, but there has to be a fine line. There has to be a point where it's too much and it has to stop. My comment was that, I remember when I was a kid growing up, you could buy a pop bottle. You could buy a pop out of a glass bottle, and you had to pay a deposit. And you took the bottle back, and they gave you back your money mm-hmm. and all that. Now, I remember when Coca-Cola switched over to the plastic bottles, and they were disposable. They were one use. And I thought, I remember thinking then, this is going to be a problem, you know, because, I mean, I was like 10 years old, and I was thinking, this is going to be a problem because, you know, what are they going to do? Eventually, there's not going to be anywhere to throw these plastic bottles. And then they came, Walmart used the plastic bags and all that, and Kroger and all them. The lady was talking about picking up dog mess with the plastic bag and all that stuff. I get that too. But my question is, what is so wrong with switching over to biodegradable plastic?
Well, yeah.
Problem solved.
Yeah, I think that that's a really good question, Don. What, and I'm glad you called and asked it. George Leonard, first of all, before we talk about what's the problem with switching to biodegradable, is biodegradable that much better than the plastics that are not biodegradable when it comes to the impact on our waterways?
Yeah, let's talk about it. It's a complicated complicated issue. But can I throw a few numbers at you?
Yeah.
We're debating about straws here.
Yeah.
So your readers may not know, or your listeners may not know, that we organize what's called the International Coastal Cleanup every September. And there were 1,100 volunteers that came out from Ohio and participated in this global effort. And we track all the garbage that's picked up around the world. And every year we create a top 10 list. And straws last year were number 7 on the top 10 list. There were 409,087 of them collected around the world's beaches. So, you know, straws in the ocean are a big deal. The rest of that list included things like cigarette butts and plastic beverage bottles and plastic beverage caps, food wrappers, other grocery bags, glass, a range of other materials, right? So there are a whole range of materials that we're finding in the marine environment. So, you know, straws are a bit of a kind of a poster child right now for the problem. I mean, they're really focusing people's efforts, and they're really, I think, focusing people's frustrations. I think you hear that in the conversation today. And from where we sit at Ocean Conservancy, it's a testament that we really need to step up and fix this problem.
So are the biodegradables that much better, Elisa Mann?
So the problem with the plastic bags is they don't degrade. Mm-hmm. So they photodegrade, meaning that they break up into smaller and smaller bits.
Okay.
And so these little bits will float around our waterways and kind of attract other chemicals to them. And then we see fish eat them, and then that's how it moves up to the food chain eventually into us.
Okay.
And so, the you know, additionally, the problem with the plastic is that we're not paying the full environmental consequences. So it's made of oil, which, you know, is not going to, we don't have an unlimited amount of oil. And so the design of the plastic bag was designed to be disposable, but engineered to last a lifetime. So the average person will use their plastic bag for 12 minutes, but it's going to stay in our environment for thousands of years. And so it's really not the best designed, you know,
can't we redesign? I mean, could we make those bags biodegradable like we do with the dog bags?
Yeah. So, Elisa, nice to meet you. And I would totally agree with your statement here. At Ocean Conservancy, we want to make sure that we don't sort of convey a message in which biodegradability is seen as a solution to the ocean plastic problem.
Okay.
And part of it is what Elisa just said, which is you can create biodegradable plastics of many of these things that we're finding in the ocean. But there's really sort of two problems. One is if they do break up, they basically break up into microplastics,
okay.
So they make the problem worse. And then the other thing is that biodegradability as a concept is focused on degradability in landfills, essentially. So it's not designed. It doesn't basically work in the ocean.
Okay, I apologize because I misunderstood. I thought you were talking about conventional plastic bags, and you were talking about biodegradable.
I was talking about plastic.
You were talking about plastic bags and biodegradable. It still doesn't break down in a desirable way in the oceans. For what we're talking about is what you're saying, George.
Yeah, so I'm saying the standards for biodegradability are designed for basically commercial composters, which have a certain humidity level, a certain light level, et cetera. And so those are conditions that really don't exist in the ocean.
Email from Jeff was just following a Columbus trash truck. Plastic bags were blowing out of it. An email from Angel. I wondered if there are biodegradable bags for bathroom trash cans. I reuse the plastic bags for bathroom cans, but I'd like to switch to something better for the environment. And that's kind of what I'm getting at is in the realm of biodegradable, it seems to be limited to just things like, you know, dog refuse bags. Elisa, are we missing something?
We could use paper bags.
Okay. Just eliminate the plastic altogether. Uh-huh. Okay. Let's get to a call. Andrea in Grove City. You're on the air. Hi, Andrea.
Hi. How are you?
Good. Thanks.
I wanted to get back to the plastic bags in the grocery stores. The grocery stores don't make it easy for you to bring your own canvas bags or other kind of reusable bags.
How so?
Well, you know, if you have a larger grocery order and you're not going through the self-checkout, you have to ask the clerk to, you know, use your canvas bags in that carousel thing that they have. And you get some dirty looks from the checkout people. I have them, for the most part, I mean, I end up using some plastic bags. Just, I guess I'm too intimidated to insist on the canvas. But most of this stuff, anything that's larger or heavier, I just have them put directly back into the cart.
Yeah.
And then I take it out, you know, to the parking lot and put it in the trunk of my car where I keep my boxes and reusable bags. So I think we need more understanding and cooperation from the grocers.
What about that, Elissa, man? Is there a, do you work with grocers? Are they part of this equation?
They are definitely a part of this equation. So we're lucky because, as you said, there's over 200 jurisdictions that have already put some kind of control on bags.
In the United States.
In the United States. Mm-hmm. So we're not reinventing the wheel. There's, you know, or there's businesses that operate outside of Ohio that are already, you know, doing this. And so I personally have not found a lot of pushback from grocery stores when I give them my canvas bags.
Yeah, I haven't either.
So I don't. But you can also shop at places like Lucky's Market or Whole Foods where they offer only paper bags. You know, Aldi's, you know, they Costco, like they don't offer bags at all. And they're still very successful, you know, businesses.
Huh.
Yeah. So, Anne, can I provide a West Coast perspective?
Sure, George Leonard, go for it.
So Ocean Conservancy is a national conservation organization. We're headquartered in D.C., but we have staff around the country. I'm in the California office here in Santa Cruz, and in Santa Cruz, you know, we moved a number of years ago to get rid of plastic bags, and it was a little bit of a hiccup in the beginning, where I think maybe your listeners are now, which is in this kind of transition period. You know, now we're in a situation in town where nobody gives it a second thought. You know, everybody's got bags in the back of their cars. Everybody hops out. I used to forget them in the back of my car, and now I never do. And the grocery stores are all on board with this. So, you know, once you kind of work yourself through that and the community kind of, you know, shifts into a different place, it's nobody really gives it a second thought at that point.
Okay. Andrea, thanks for that call. I'm going to turn to Deb in Canal Winchester now. Hi, Deb.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
There are so many things that I wanted to talk about on this topic, but I travel quite a bit and I hike a lot, and plastic bags has just always been unbelievably just eyesight or an eyesore wherever I go. And one time I went on a hike here locally in Columbus, and I picked up 39 bags of trash, of grocery store bags, and I never brought one with me. Like, I picked up that much trash and all the bags I found there as well. And it's just ridiculous. And I've had the biodegradable takeaway containers.
Mm-hmm.
I've had a couple that I tested in my compost bin
for
10 years now, and they still look like almost like the day that I put them in there.
Are they the biodegradable made from paper fibers?
No, they were like plastic biodegradable, but it probably was early, because like I said, it was like 10 years ago, so it's probably in the early phases. But they're not biodegradable at all. And my point is I've been like this for like 20 years. I've never bought or never get plastic bags at grocery stores, and I refuse to buy plastic bags for trash bags or for picking up dog food or dog poop or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But if people just change the way they look at things, they would see how much trash that can be reused for those kinds of things that they're already throwing away. Like, I use my trash bag as a dog food bag, or cereal bags can be used for your bathroom trash, or, you know, your deli bags that you get cheese or deli meats in can be used to pick up your dog poop. I mean, it's like, if you just start looking at the things that you throw away that you could use for those things, I mean, it becomes a lot simpler. People just need to rethink, you know, the way that they're thinking. And the guy with the straws that says we're trying to shame him, I don't really feel like this is a point of trying to shame him. I mean, this is a problem with our environment. And I just think we can do better, and we should be.
Deb, thanks for your call. We'll continue our conversation. We're talking about plastic bags, plastic straws, plastic this, plastic that. It's everywhere. And now it's in our oceans and our waterways. Some communities are working to limit tax, whatever, to limit the use of that plastic. My guest, George Leonard, he's chief scientist for Ocean Conservancy. And also with me, Elissa Yoder-Mann. She's conservation manager for the Sierra Club. What do you think? Should we be limiting our use of these kinds of items? 614-292-8513. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. We're talking about how to manage plastic use. Still with us, conservation manager for the Ohio chapter of the Sierra Club, Elissa Yoder-Mann, and by phone, chief scientist of Ocean Conservancy. That's a nonprofit environmental advocacy group based in Washington, D.C., George Leonard, who's talking to us from California. What do you think about fees, restrictions, and so forth on plastic bags, plastic straws, as George Leonard called it, the poster child for this effort right now. 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You talked about, George, the 1,100 volunteers that collected 69,000 items of trash from waterways around Ohio. That's from 2016. The 2017 report is yet to be released. How does Ohio stack up?
Well, I don't have those numbers right in front of me. If you go to the back of the reports that we release every year, we list out each country. So I'd have to get back to you on exactly where you fall. But I think it's fair to say that Ohio and most of the states around the U.S. kind of fall all in the same category. That is, that we find a range of materials in pretty high abundance in a lot of different places. Ocean Conservancy, we did an analysis of some of these data we collect. And looked at those patterns across the different U.S. states, and I'm pleased to report that Ohio was not in the most dirty category. Mm-hmm. That unfortunately fell to the state of Texas, but the kind of the West Coast and the East Coast were sort of in the middle there.
I just want to let folks know that we did ask plastics. Related organizations to join us today, and they declined our invitation. We have talked a lot about oceans, but smaller waterways can really feel the brunt of this kind of pollution too, right, Elissa?
Absolutely. So we, at the Sierra Club, a lot of what we do is hold cleanups, and so usually they're along the river. So for one example, we have been, for the last 4 years, cleaning up an area on the lower head dam of the Scioto River right off of Greenlawn. And so we clean it up 2 to 3 times a year, and we're right below the dam on a floodplain. So all the trash that is coming down the river gets deposited on that floodplain. And I am not exaggerating. We take out, for each cleanup, approximately 1 to 2 tons of trash. I mean, it is an insane amount of trash that is just from the rivers, you know, that is constantly being deposited.
6 tons a year then.
Mm-hmm.
Up to 6 tons a year.
I mean, and so we see, I mean, if you can drive down the interstate and see it, you can walk in your neighborhood and see it. I mean, it is a devastating problem that is really not being addressed.
Is it Jorge in Delaware County?
Yes.
Hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
So I wanted to make a couple of comments of some of the things that I have done to, you know, trying to do my part as far as, like, not using plastic. You know, the only people that I can really influence are my kids. So my kids are really, like, really good about not using lids. For example, last time we went to Chipotle, we didn't take lids. You know, you're going to sit down, you're going to put the lid on, and you're just going to throw it away after you use it. What's the point of doing that? We don't need lids, you know?
Not so, if you're just sitting in the restaurant. You know, yeah. Some people would say, well, if I'm taking it into the car, I do. But you're saying not if I'm just sitting down in the restaurant. And I'm sure people would argue that even if you're taking it into the car, you don't. But, you know.
Yeah. And that's the one thing, we've been doing. If we go in the car, we try not to. We try to just finish the drink when we're, when we're in the restroom. But we try not to use any plastic as much as we can. But another thing that I also wanted to bring up is there's times that I find plastic bags. And the one thing that the problem with the plastic bags is if you don't tie them, like I tie them in knots, I make it into a big ball so that they're heavier. So if for some reason I come across a bag or I end up getting a bag from a store, I actually tie them in knots until it's just this big ball that is just, if it drops on the ground, it's not going to fly around. And I know it's not going to resolve all the biggest problems, but at least it'll keep it from flying away. And, I told my kid, if you don't do that, you don't know if that bag is going to end up in the ocean. Mm-hmm. Well, we're here in Ohio. Mm-hmm. You'll be surprised. It moves around, right?
Mm-hmm. Jorge, thanks for your call.
Thank you.
I heard someone once refer to them as banners of chaos. That's always stuck with me. Michael in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Michael. You wanted to talk about what Italy does. Welcome.
Yeah. Thanks, Dan. A wonderful program. And I know people in the age of Trump don't want to know what Europe does, but we just spent 3 months in Italy in a small village where my mom was born. And they have 6 different recycling bins. I won't go into them, but they're so meticulous about it. Of course, they are 60, 70 million in
a very small place.
Yeah. Like the size of somewhere between Florida and California. But I just want to say that this plastic bag issue is so important because even we recycle, but only Kroger that I know of takes plastic bags, and they do use very biodegradable ones in at least in Italy. They are 10 centesimi, but that's a big a big deal for them. 10 cents. I just think, what do we do with plastic bags? In fact, do we know what Kroger does with them?
That's a good question. What does Kroger do with those bags they collect in that big bin?
So the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency tells us that less than 5% of our plastic bags are returned to the grocery store for recycling. So a very, very small amount. Kroger here in Ohio, there is a recycling plant that they purchased in Indiana. And so they ship all of their plastic bags and they're downcycled, meaning that they're made into plastic pellets that are, used to make like inexpensive deck furniture. Another note about Kroger, I will tell you, I was contacted by a young person, a high school student, who works for Kroger, and he was so upset about the amount of plastic that they weren't recycling, and he began to reach out to me on his concern about plastic. And then when Senate Bill 210 came, he actually went to the State House and did some lobbying because, he worked in the industry firsthand and saw how much was being wasted. And he wanted to do something about it.
Hmm. Yeah, recycling is a challenge right now. It's worth thinking about some kind of global numbers on this. So of all the plastics that's ever been produced in the world, only 10% has been recycled. And only 10% of that is 1% of global plastic production, has been recycled more than once. So in some respects, recycling kind of writ large is kind of a way stop on the way to the landfill. So if we're going to solve this problem kind of at the global level, we're going to have to reduce our use considerably to the things that we need, that we really just need. And we've talked a lot about whether we need things like straws and plastic bags. Mm-hmm. And then we're going to have to really rethink recycling in a way where we can boost those numbers majorly, which is really all about creating markets for the product after it's collected. Otherwise, it's just going to sit in the back of a warehouse somewhere.
Because now China is also telling us that they don't want our recycling waste anymore,
right?
Either.
Yeah.
So, George, do you know that statistic that the New York Times came out and said something like the half of all the plastic that is on the earth was produced in the last 13 years or something like that?
Yeah, I think that's right. So there was the study I'm referencing was by Roland Geyer, who's a material scientist at the University of California in Santa Barbara. and was part of this working group that I was referencing that Ocean Conservancy hosted a couple of years ago. And I believe that number came out of his big analysis that was published a little bit about 6 months ago.
Tama in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi there. How's it going?
Fine, thanks.
I work as a sustainability coordinator for a local restaurant group, and this has been a topic that, we have been battling for quite some time. Mm-hmm. You mentioned recycling, but there is that common statement of reduce, reuse, recycle. And for restaurant groups, all over the map, we are huge producers of waste. When it comes with food, we have oil, plastic products, bags, the whole nine. And so, we have started a program, the Final Straw, where we want to reduce our straw use.
Cute. Okay.
Usage. It's one of those things, like, we have to give what the consumer wants. But also, it's this baffling thing as when we, reduce, we try to reduce our waste, we try to compost, all of those things. But it still seems like there are a lot of barriers that we run into when it comes to reducing. So do any of you guys have any examples of, things that maybe a restaurant could do to better reduce their waste? What is it that consumers, aside from straws and bags, are there any other things that, we could be thinking about? Because I think businesses overall have a huge stakehold in this problem that we face.
Yeah. George Leonard?
Yeah, so we don't typically work with restaurants kind of on that side of the house. Alyssa, you may have more
Alyssa?
Specific suggestions about what folks are doing in Ohio.
Yeah, so what would be a good resource is we've been working with the Surfrider Foundation that has a Ohio chapter, and they are developing a list of restaurants. They're called Great Lakes Safe Restaurants, so they're ones that produce less waste and less plastic. Kind of going back to the 3 R's, we would really like to change it to the 4 R's and add that refuse, that you can refuse a plastic straw, or simple things like, not using styrofoam takeout, use the paper, or bring your own reusable, takeout container, throw it in your bag before you go out to dinner. But that's a good, I'm excited to hear Tama, about the Final Straw project that she has. And I would love to hear more and connect with her on that so we can kind of collaborate and brainstorm some more creative ideas.
All right. Tama, thanks for that call. We have time for one more call, and I'm going to take the call from Matt. Matt, we're running out of time, but I wanted to get to you.
Awesome. Thanks. Am I on the air?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, great. The legislature has tried to restrict the ability of municipalities in the past to regulate things because the legislature is run by rural Republicans from places that have, less people than 1 square mile of Columbus. So, they've banned municipalities from prohibiting fracking within their borders, and they've also banned red light cameras, which were proven to save lives. So I just wanted to bring up the fact that this issue is stemming from the Republican rule for decades over the state house. It's not, our city leaders want to be progressive, but they're being stifled by the state.
Okay. Matt, thanks for that call. Thanks for listening. George Leonard, Chief Scientist of Ocean Conservancy, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
Also, Elissa Yoder Mann, Conservation Manager for the Sierra Club of Ohio, thanks to you.
Thank you.
Thanks to the AllSides staff, assistant producer Kyle McKinnon, AllSides interns Martin Coleman, Alexandra Havolchik, Scott Good, and Ray Brewster, with video production by Rich Blue and Amber Blue. Alan DeCenzo is the composer of our theme music. Be sure to like AllSides on Facebook. Follow the show on Twitter at WOSU AllSides. You can follow me on Twitter, too, at Ann Fisher, WOSU. Thanks again for listening. This is AllSides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.